Thank you for inviting me back. Were any of you here? I think probably a lot of you were here when I gave a talk in March. Yeah, quite a few. Yeah. And in that talk, I talked about A Course in Miracles. And Connie suggested, well, maybe you could talk about sacred geometry, which I enjoy doing a lot. And it's another favorite topic. And anyway, the whole idea of sacred geometry, I think, hinges on one pivotal word, which is sacred, because it could be sacred anything, right? So I think it gets back to maybe I shouldn't have handed those out, because anyway, well, I'll get to that later, but that's okay. Anyway, thank you again for being here. This is always fun for me. The whole idea of what's become known as sacred geometry hinges on the idea that either everything is sacred or nothing is sacred. And I think that kind of gets back to what I kind of touched on back in March, which is that really there's two thought systems. And there's a thought system of unity and oneness and inclusion. And that's the truth of what we are. That's the being that we all share. And I couldn't help but think of the symbolism of what you shared in the prayer request to hold charity in our hearts. I mean, that even if you don't know who that person is, that's a pretty good mnemonic, isn't it? A pretty good memory device. Mm-hmm. If we can remember to do that and be aware of that oneness that we all share, that, I think, is the sacredness. That's the quality that we all came here to remember and to embody and to hold in our minds and in our hearts. So that's, and thank you for that lovely meditation, too, because that really reminded me of the peace that we all have here, and that's in that space in our hearts. So I think that's what makes it sacred. And we could apply that to anything we look at, anything in geometry. It could be sacred embroidery. It could be sacred archaeology. Anything that we want to look at can have that awareness applied to it, the awareness of inclusion as opposed to the awareness of separate interests and the we versus they kind of thinking. So again, I think to preface what I'm going to talk about with kind of a quick discussion about what do we mean by sacred? Because, you know, geometry is no more or less sacred than anything else, but it's a fun place to go if you want to just dabble with things that we find around ourselves all the time that are very commonplace. And we can use anything as a reminder, anything as a mnemonic device or a memory jog, if you will. So it could be holding charity in our hearts. It could be a song you hear on the radio. It could be the lyrics of the music you were playing. It's like, oh yeah, I like this. I like the feeling, you know, of what was being played. You know, it could be anything that reminds us of that interconnectedness and that oneness, that the unity that we all share. And so I think geometry can be a fun place to go with that. I kind of got into this in high school. I found two books. One was Secrets of the Great Pyramid by Peter Tompkins. And in it, it had this chapter on the golden ratio. And then there was another book called This Living Earth by David Cavagnaro. And it was all about biology and wildlife and all that sort of thing. And he had, not a whole chapter, but several pages devoted to this golden ratio thing. I thought, well, what's this all about? So that became one of those fairly active interests. And when I went off to college, I pretty much exhausted the Shields Library at UC Davis of everything I could find. That's before, you know, Google, of course. You know, going through the 3x5 card catalog, anything that had to do with sacred geometry or divine geometry or anything like that. And I found a lot of interesting things. But they all seemed to tie into a few basic ideas. And one of them was the idea that things are interconnected. And I think interconnectedness is an aspect of sameness. And obviously on the level of form, we're all different. I mean, we all appear to have different bodies and histories and backgrounds and all this stuff. And we all value those things and usually make big deals about those things, and that's okay. But I think the root of a lot of strife and warfare is really this idea that that's more important than the sameness. And having had the privilege of traveling to a few other countries over the years and seeing everybody is really in the same boat, we're all here to undo the same misconception of differences, I think. And so that interconnectedness, realizing that we all have that interconnectedness, can be a very helpful tool. And anything that helps us remember that. So I think, for me, the golden ratio is just one of many tools, and the larger subject of sacred geometry. The golden ratio in these two books that I mentioned is a ratio where you divide something. Again, it's all the about what you use it for, right? You can either divide something or you can put it back together. So, but it's kind of defined as a ratio of dividing a line or some proportion in such a way that the ratio of the large portion to the small portion is the same as the whole to the large portion. Now, if you turn the math, and I'm not going to get real technical, but if you crank the numbers, you get a quadratic equation out of that, which is 1 plus phi, or the golden ratio, equals phi squared. And I'm almost done. Bear with me. And if you run that through your calculator or whatever, you get 1 plus the square root of 5 over 2, which sounds like some random, you know, formula. But it turns out to be about 1.618, and then it goes 0339.8874, and it goes out this infinite series of digits that spew on forever. But and that's just kind of like, you know, a little bit of trivia. But what's cool about this proportion is that it happens on all kinds of places. So contemporary artists use it in a lot of places, and you can Google sacred geometry and you'll find my website, and you'll find lots of other websites, and you'll find all kinds of stuff on this thing. This fascinated everybody from Plato and Pythagoras and Leonardo da Vinci. If you look at the studies they did, and I have actually a 3-day workshop that I've done on this subject, so I'm going to condense this down really, really briefly. But there's tons of wonderful material on this online, and the Renaissance artists in particular were fascinated with this proportion because it had a quality of beauty and aesthetics to it that I think reminds us that everything is interconnected. So again, even just the definition of that proportion, where the large and the small are related to the whole and the large. And what's interesting is this shows up in things all the way from quantum physics, the realm of the very small. There's basically a new, I think it's a 10-dimensional geometry that is one of the current contemporary ideas in physics, that shows that there's actually a geometric proportion that includes this golden ratio that is basically the fundamental building blocks of what we think of as matter and energy at the very small level. At the very large level, spiral galaxies, spirals, and well, all the way from galaxies down to little microscopic spirals, the inner ear, the claws of parrots, ferns make spirals, chambered nautilus shells. I mean, there's countless examples, and again, you can Google that. The way that spirals happen with the plant kingdom. The ratio of the angles of plants, the leaves that go around the stem, that is a golden angle that has that same golden ratio in it. So there's just all kinds of places that this principle of interconnectedness shows up. So I think, again, the practical value is when we remember to see everything through the eyes of that interconnectedness. And about the same time that I was learning about this proportion and other things related to it, I also came across, through a friend and teacher named Floyd Edwards, of this little book called The Kabbalion. And so I put together this book about 5 years ago. And on the cover of it, I have seven symbols that relate to seven Hermetic laws that all have each geometric symbols. And so that's what's on the handout. So I'll talk a little bit about that. How am I doing on time? Like, so we've got about 10 minutes or so? Okay, I'll try to go through these pretty quickly here. So, and the center symbol in this handout is a circle. A circle is a perfect symbol for wholeness, completion, oneness, indivisibility, equality. There's no point on the circle that's farther or closer from any other point. The center of the circle is a sort of a symbol of the heart. You know, what's at the center of everything, of everyone? Well, that's the heart. And these seven symbols, again, they're sort of somewhat stylized, just because I put them on the book cover. But they, you know, you can find them everywhere. Circles obviously show up in nature in countless places. Everything from planets to atoms to, you know, everything in between. There's also these seven hermetic laws that I discovered that were, I think, fit very nicely with these. The first one, if you look in the upper left corner, is the law of mentalism. It goes, all is mind, the universe is mental. And I think the circle is a really great symbol for that, because an infinite circle or an infinite sphere encompasses and embraces everyone. And that's really the awareness, I think, that really is our essence. We think we're just a part of the whole, but we really are all the whole thing, dreaming that we're just these little pieces. And I think unity is a wonderful word to express that oneness, that we're all helping each other remember, that it's that one essence that we all share, the sameness that gets us back to the oneness. So that's the inner symbol there that has the six around it. The second one, if you go to the kind of the upper section, there's correspondence. And that symbol that I think fits very beautifully with this is the Kabbalion phrase, as above, so below, as below, so above. It's probably familiar. It's probably one of the most popular or familiar hermetic axioms. And if you think about this symbol, it's like the shape of an eye, which is really formed by two intersecting circles. Or metaphorically, symbolically, and I think, you know, since we're all kind of walking symbols here, the eye, or that shape that's sometimes called a vesica piscis or a mandorla, it goes by the almond, other names, that shape basically is a circle and another circle of identical, equal size, where the periphery of one touches the heart or center of another. More symbolism, right? When we reach out and touch each other's heart, that's when we feel connected and we correspond in a way that relates rather than dissociates. So I think that's going to be a really helpful symbol. So every time we see someone eye to eye or heart to heart, you know, we're doing that. Even the plant kingdom has an example of this, the stomata, which is the little, basically the part of every leaf on a plant that has the respiration where the water and the air go in and out. That's a vesicle shape. And in countless places you can find in nature where these things show up. The third one, if you kind of go counterclockwise, is vibration. And I put some sine waves inside of a circle there. The Kabbalion says, nothing rests, everything moves, everything vibrates. And if you think about the whole range of the spectrum of all the different frequencies of thoughts and feelings and colors and sounds and the vibrations, again, all these principles and ideas relate to one of two thought systems. Am I using my mind, am I using my thinking and my feeling to bring together an inclusive awareness, an awareness of unity, or am I using it to divide? And and we know by how we feel. If we're thinking divisively or judgmentally or in any way that condemns what seems to be other, we're forgetting what even modern physics tells us is actually one thing. And Einstein says that we're actually experiencing the optical delusion of consciousness. And that, I think that's kind of a cool phrase, because it basically tells us that you know, what we see separate people and things and tables and gates and windows. But physics tells us, actually, it's just one thing. But it's vibrating at different frequencies. So we're blinded by the apparent differences. But that's not what the physics tells us, actually. So it's interesting. So the next one walking around here is polarity, which is, I've got sort of a little stellar kind of shape here. Again, the thing that the Kabbalion says, everything is dual, everything has poles, everything has its pair of opposites. Like and unlike are the same. Opposites are identical in nature, but different in degrees. extremes meet, all truths are but half-truths, all paradoxes may be reconciled. Again, when we think that our differences are more important than our willingness to see the shared interest, that's when we usually get into trouble. If you kind of just kind of reflect back through your life and kind of take a little inventory of where have I gotten into the most trouble? Well, that's where we've, you know, by golly, I'm going to stand my ground and you know, from the domestic to the international level and everything in between, those are the things, places where usually we kind of, if we are honest with ourselves, yeah, we kind of get into the most trouble. So working our way around, we have rhythm. And the Kabbalion here says, everything flows out and in. Everything has its tides. All things rise and fall. The pendulum swing manifests in everything. The measure of the swing to the right is the measure of the swing to the left. Rhythm compensates. So a symbol for that one, again, a neat geometric symbol, is the five-pointed star, which incidentally has the golden ratio in it. If you stand like this and make essentially a five-pointed star or a pentagram, the ratio of all the pieces of that five-pointed star are divided by that golden ratio. And what Da Vinci's classic measure of man, I'm sure you've seen it, the navel to the ground, navel to the top of the head. That's the golden ratio. Not exactly, but if you average it out over hundreds of people, it comes out to about that. Again, the cross-section of every DNA molecule is a golden ratio proportion. It's 34 to 21 angstroms, which just happens to be two numbers in the Fibonacci series, which at infinity converge to the golden ratio. If you're familiar with the Fibonacci series, is where you take one and one, unity and unity, if you will, appropriate words, right? And then you add them, then the next number in that series is always the sum of the previous two. So in other words, one and one become two, one and two become three, two and three become five, and then eight, and then 13, and then 21, and 34, and there's those the two the angstrom measurements of each turn of a DNA helix, which in turn also has pentagonal spirals, more golden ratio, hanging on that. So we have the golden ratio appearing in formulas for the very, very small and microcosmic level, the DNA level, the level that we're most comfortable with and familiar with, on from starfish to sand dollars, which I put on one of the banners in Yahats, and Nancy did a wonderful lighthouse banner. If you go through Yahats, you'll see those. All kinds of places it shows up in nature, even the really large. I put an article on the Geometry Code website the other day of a researcher who discovered there's actually two or three equations that relate to the physics of black holes that become the golden ratio when you work out the math. Who'd have thunk it, right? So anyway, fascinating stuff, and there's tons of stuff on the golden ratio online, including the website that I put together. Cause and effect is the sixth one. I think this is such an important one because this one tells us that we have a choice. We have a choice of are we going to think inclusively? Are we going to make peace a priority or a war a priority in every thought and every action we take, right? Okay, the Kabbalion here says, every cause has its effect. Every effect has its cause. Everything happens according to law. Chance is but a name for law not recognized. There are many planes of causation, but nothing escapes the law. Okay, and the symbol here geometrically is a fractal, because one cause, one choice we make, avalanches and snowballs into an infinite number of consequences, and it's really a whole matrix of choices that we're all making that make up what we think of as the universe. But every single choice makes a huge difference. You know, I heard read somewhere years ago that the thickness of a dime on launch can send a rocket to a different planet, you know, depending on where that thickness of the dime. So, every choice we make leads to either greater peace or greater conflict. So I think a fractal is kind of a nice metaphor for that, because it's like the, you know, branches of a tree, but you can trace it all back to the trunk. And the trunk is always the now moment. This moment is really the only one we have control over, but fortunately we have complete freedom to choose the unity thinking, the oneness thinking that brings us back to completion. And then the final symbol in the upper right is what I call a yin-yang diameter fractal. So The Kabbalion says gender or generation. Gender is in everything. It has masculine and feminine principles. It manifests on all planes. So if you think of the yin and the yang, or the different aspects of creation, and look at the generations of where things propagate, and you can look at the things that you're interested in and say, oh, well, I did this, and then that propagated that, and that propagated that, or I instead chose that, and those things propagated after their kind and after their nature. And I think it can be really helpful to look at places in nature where we see the results of our choice. And so this is very closely related to cause and effect. And these laws are all interrelated. And just as the geometry is all interrelated, you can take some of these three-dimensional shapes that have the golden ratio in them, called Platonic solids. And Plato, of course, knew a lot of this kind of stuff. And he was basically one that suggested that, you know, we look at not the symbol, but what the symbol represents. And I think that's where we start to learn to generalize and see if this very first law, the law of mentalism, if everything in the universe is a reflection of mind, then it behooves all of us, not in any kind of pressuring way, but just because it's more fun and we enjoy the result a lot more, if we just look at the choices we make in our mind and where it goes, what generates, what propagates. So anyway. So that is a very quick overview of an extensive subject called sacred geometry, and I just tried to highlight a few symbols and a few ideas. One last thought is I put keywords that are from a book called Life and Teachings of the Master of the Far East, which I read in high school, and I love the sermon, if you will, that Jesus in this book gives, and he uses the keywords life, love, strength, purity, beauty, and perfection. And it just reminds me of some great feeling. And then the last one being gratitude. And that really sums it up, because the feeling of gratitude is really what brings it all together for us when we learn to appreciate the tremendous blessings that we all have. And so thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.